Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ask the Horse Live. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, digital editor at thehorse.com. Keeping your horse's hindgut healthy is critical for his overall comfort and well-being. It is important to catch and treat hindgut issues before they progress through careful veterinary oversight and diligent management. This event is sponsored by Purina Animal Nutrition. To answer your questions, we're joined by two expert panelists, Dr. Frank Andrews from Louisiana State University and Dr. Mary Beth Gordon from Purina. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate being here.
Dr. Andrews, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Yeah, it's great. So I was finished my vet degree at Washington State University in Pullman, Washington, and then did a residency in equine medicine and surgery at The Ohio State University, and then spent 20 years on the faculty at the University of Tennessee after a year in private practice, and then 15 years here at LSU as director of the Equine Health and Sports Performance Program. My research interests include gastrointestinal diseases and primarily gastric and hindgut ulcers. And so looking at supplements that might be helpful for the horse, because we understand horses don't want to be on pharmaceutical agents their whole life. So looking at things that might be able to help with hindgut and stomach health for longer term than just using pharmaceutical agents.
Awesome. Dr. Gordon, can you tell us a little bit about your background and your role at Purina?
Sure, absolutely. I have been with Purina. I'm in my 19th year now. I'm their senior director of all of their research and new product development for the horse group. So I oversee all of the research we do at our research farm in Gray Summit, Missouri, and our team of scientists that work on all of that there. And then we have a team of PhD nutritionists that help support the sales force and horse owners and help to support our products all throughout the United States. And my undergraduate degree is from Delaware Valley University in Pennsylvania, and my PhD is from Rutgers University in New Jersey. And as my career relates to gut health in horses, what's really been important to me is finding products that truly work and make a difference for the horse. I think we find that can be difficult nowadays because there's a million things out there, a million supplements, a million feeds. So how do you actually find something that does what it says it's supposed to do, is backed by research, and does the right thing for the horse so that they can live their best, happy, and healthiest lives?
Before we begin answering questions, I just want to remind everyone of the Ask the Horse Live format. We're starting with questions that were submitted during registration. If you're listening live and would like to submit a question, please do so via the chat window. We'll do our best to get to as many of your questions as possible. If you're listening to the podcast recording of this event and would like to join us live in the future, please visit thehorse.com/askthehorselive to register for notifications. And with that, we're going to jump into our questions. Dr. Gordon, you have our first one from Jennifer in New Jersey, who asks what the hindgut is and what role does it play in a horse's digestive system?
Great. Well, being a native New Jerseyan myself, it's wonderful to have a Jersey girl call in with a question. I think that's great. When it comes to the hindgut for horses, it comprises the cecum, the large colon, the small colon, and the rectum. And it's truly the workhorse of the digestive tract because it takes up 60% of the entire tract's capacity. So it's the majority of the whole digestive tract. And horses are known as hindgut fermenters. So the amazing microbiome, or all the bugs that are in mostly the horse's cecum and large colon, they are constantly able to ferment all the fibers and forages that we feed to horses. And they those bugs create what's called volatile fatty acids, which then can be converted into nutrients. And they also have create, you know, vitamins and minerals in the body that are really important to horses, and have a really critical relationship with the immune system to help keep horses healthy as well. But truly, the hindgut of the horse, like I said before, is the powerhouse of the horse's digestive tract, and is what allows them to go out and be out in a pasture and eat grass all day and get the nutrition that they need from that. Where, for example, with humans, I can't go out at lunch and just put my head down and eat in the pasture and get my lunch out of that. I don't have that hindgut and that microbiome and all those bugs working for me.
Awesome. Dr. Andrews, Angela in Florida wants to know what clinical signs horses might present with that could indicate hindgut problems.
Great. Well, Angela from Florida. So, yeah, one thing I wanted to mention about the role of the hindgut, it plays a huge role in water, water absorption, and water in the feces too, and the manure. So that's the other thing. So you're looking at clinical signs associated with the hindgut problems. So horses can have really no clinical signs with early changes in the hindgut, but they can develop lethargy. They kind of look like they're kind of hanging their head and walking around, inappetence, so they don't eat very well, maybe intermittent appetite. They can have colic, and that can be mild colic signs, intermittent colic signs, or it could be severe colic signs, especially if they have gas distension in the large intestine. And really the other thing is inconsistent manure output to intermittent diarrhea. That certainly can be an indicator. Increased heart rate, respiratory rate as they get more and more sick. Sometimes when it's chronic, weight loss might occur. They might also, as the horse gets more chronic, you might see yellow gums. And that means that the horse has not been eating very well, even though when you put the feet in there, sometimes they look like they're eating, but they're not eating very well. And then as they become more and more chronic, sometimes you'll see the ventral edema, and that's fluid accumulation under the skin right on the ventral midline. So you'll look down there and you'll see kind of a pocket of fluid. And then certainly there could be edema in the legs sometimes when their protein gets real low. So they can start stocking up when they're standing in the stall, and even when they're standing out in the pasture. So those are kind of the clinical signs with the hindgut issues.
Dr. Gordon, Amy in Illinois wants to know how often to feed a probiotic supplement. Should she feed it to her horse every day or only at certain times?
All right. Great question from Amy in Illinois. I hate when I have to answer a question this way, but I'm going to do it anyway, which is, well, it depends. And it depends on the amount of stress and what her horse is going through at the time. So, for example, I have two retired geldings that live outside in a big paddock, and they are not undergoing any stress, and they don't have any hindgut problems. Therefore, they don't need a probiotic supplement at all. Now, if they were to have a specific event and they get cut, and maybe they get antibiotic treatment or something like that, and then there is some type of gastrointestinal disruption to their microbiome, then I would put them on a probiotic supplement, and I would, you know, try to choose one wisely, one that's got good research behind it and has been shown to help horses with, you know, certain conditions. And I may only need to do that for a certain amount of time until those horses are, you know, appear to be back and normal and thriving and healthy again. But if Amy has a horse that is constantly stressed and doing things that are stressful to their gut health, so traveling a lot, showing a lot, extensive training, then I'm going to recommend a daily probiotic supplement to really support that horse's gut health every day.
Dr. Gordon, somewhat on that topic, we have a question from Kim in the live audience, and she would like to know what are the best supplement options for helping horses with hindgut ulcers?
So that's a really great question and something that we have been researching now for the past decade. Obviously, if people have looked around online lately, we do have a new probiotic that we have just launched. It's just the beginning of this month, about 2 weeks ago, for horses that we feel truly is a game changer because we've done the research to show that it remains live. This probiotic remains alive through the manufacturing process. It remains alive in through the horse's foregut, through the stomach, where the pH can get very low, and then actually has a truly positive effect in the hindgut of the horse, and has some really, really good beneficial effects for horses that are having stressful events to their gastrointestinal tract. So obviously, I'm biased in that situation, but the whole thing is you really do have to do your homework when it comes to the probiotics that are out there to give to horses. And that's also why it took us so long to come up with one. I mean, Purina has been basically beat up in the past. Why don't you have a probiotic? Why don't you have probiotics in your feed? You know, don't you see that probiotics are good for horses? And I used to say, well, yeah, I think they're good for horses, but I don't see a lot of really good research on them. And it took us a long time to really find something that we felt good about and passed what we call our test ride, which is for stands for research ingredients, delivered amount, and efficacy to your horse. So yeah, proceed with caution when it comes to the supplements. There are definitely some good ones out there that are helpful, but you've got to look for ones that are going to make a true difference.
Dr. Andrews, Portia in England asks if recently foaled or covered mares are at a higher risk of developing hindgut problems or colicking.
So, Portia, yeah, in England, definitely, anytime a horse is stressed, certainly they can have hindgut problems, they can get colicky, and so foaling and breeding, certainly a stressful event for horses, and certainly carrying foals. One of the things when the mare carries a foal, it reduces the amount of space in the abdominal cavity, and so it reduces the amount of space that the intestines can take up because the baby takes up so much space. And if the horse has inadequate water or dries out in that GI tract, it can certainly lead to colic. So I think anytime you're going to stress that horse is with these types of things. Breeding is another stressful event too. I guess if you look at breeding, it can be, if you're looking at thoroughbreds, it's a live cover. Obviously, if you're looking at artificial insemination, things like that might be a little less stressful, but it also depends on who's doing the artificial insemination, or the embryo transfer, or whatever the quarter horses are doing. So yeah, I think it would be stressful. I think whether treatment's indicated or not, but certainly watching that horse and working with your veterinarian, have regular checkups while the mare is pregnant is very helpful, I think, in if there is an indication that the mare is having problems or is stressed, then you could your veterinarian could be a good source to intervene in that horse's life.
Dr. Gordon, Becky in Ohio wants to know what some of the most common treatments for hindgut problems are.
Sure. Thanks, Becky, for submitting this question. From a nutritional standpoint, as a nutritionist, honestly, we've talked a bunch about supplements a little bit already, but the very first thing I look at when horses are presented to me with hindgut problems is their forage source. To me, a lot of the time, if horses are having chronic hindgut issues, I want to see what type of hay they're on. I want to see what the consistency of that hay is. I want to see how digestible it is. If they have a lot of that hay and it's a very consistent source, I might do a hay test on it to see what its relative feed value is and its fiber levels are so that I can determine if it seems appropriate for that horse or not. And I'll tell you, one of the things that we do to help these horses is we adjust their forage sources, and we tend to take them off their long stem roughage and take them off some, a lot of them sometimes are on this long stem scratchy type grass hay. And we might put them on soaked hay cubes, for example, or a softer, more digestible orchard type of grass hay. And we want to make sure that whatever that majority of their diet should be forage, right? Horses should have forage as the majority of their diet. But it's got to be agreeable with that horse, and not, we have to remove anything that's irritating that hindgut and or the microbiome in there that's supposed to be working for the horse instead of against the horse. After that, I tend to look at digestible fiber amounts in the diet. These horses tend to do better if I add some good quality fermentable fiber, such as beet pulp or psyllium, to the diet. So we'll add those. Then I'm going to look at supplements, things like, you know, good quality probiotic, like I spoke to before. Sometimes horses with chronic hindgut problems, if I actually treat their foregut, so they've had problems with gastric ulcers, and we can put them on a gastric buffer to help reduce the risk of gastric ulceration, that actually sort of works its whole way through the gastrointestinal tract and helps those horses a lot. And the final thing I'm going to say is, from a nutritional standpoint, sometimes these horses do really well if we turn them out and let them eat grass, put their heads down, sort of do what Mother Nature intended for them to do, and remove their stress. We've done studies at our research farm looking at all different types of gastrointestinal stressors on horses, and we absolutely can induce hindgut issues by, you know, taking them away from their friends and putting them in individual stalls and exercising them pretty vigorously. And they're common things that people do to their horses every day. And some horses are really stoic, and their stomach and is the only thing that's showing them that, you know, showing you that they're not happy. But interestingly, at the end of these studies, we turn them back out with their friends, and we, you know, we let them put their heads down and graze, and all of their hindgut challenges that we've initiated through the research to see what is working, what's not working for these horses, they gradually go away. And so that's very interesting. And so, yeah, they're very, very, very tricky, these horses with these common hindgut issues, because they're a puzzle. There's absolutely no one size fits all. But I start with the forage, and then I build from there.
Awesome. Dr. Andrews, Jillian in Portugal wants to know if there have been any recent advances in research around lymphocytic plasmacytic enteritis.
So just for a background for most of the people on here, so lymphoplasmacytic enteritis is a form of inflammatory bowel disease in horses. So similar to people, they get these immune-mediated situations. And other than the use of steroids, there's really not much new in the way of treatment, at least for horses. In people, you've probably seen, I don't know about Portugal, but in the United States, there are a lot of commercials on these biologics that, and these biologics, they block a lot of the immune response in the gut. And so they basically, when you have inflammatory bowel disease, you have an overabundance of immune system issues. The immune system kind of attacks the gut and then deposits these inflammatory cells in the wrong places. And the biologics that are used for people are very expensive, even for people. So they're not really used in horses. I know there are some companies that are looking at some of these biologics. Now, the good thing about the biologics is they're not antibiotics and they're not steroids. So they work, they're targeting different specific immune system places, and, you know, which contribute to the inflammation. So they stop the inflammation before it starts. So, you know, but there really isn't anything new other than the use of steroids for lymphoplasmacytic enteritis. There's a lot of other different enterituses that occur as well, but steroids seems to help, but not without its problems, as we know.
Dr. Gordon, Allison in England wants to know if there is any connection between high starch foods and hindgut problems.
All right, another great question and another international question. We have a lot of international questions, which is pretty awesome. That's cool. Yes, high starch feeds can create hindgut problems if they're fed too much, if there's too much of it offered in the diet. Absolutely. I mean, we're all familiar, I think, with grain overload. It's why you lock the tack room and try to put the tops on your feed cans at night, right? Because horse gets into that grain bin and, you know, doesn't know when to stop, and they eat 25, 30 pounds of feed in one sitting, and that horse is in trouble and is most likely going to colic and have some hindgut problems in the following days. And that is an emergency that needs to be, you know, you need to call your veterinarian about immediately. So there's that situation. Now, on a sort of a daily basis, can high starch foods cause hindgut problems? And the answer is still sort of the same. It comes down to the amount. Horses that are doing fast anaerobic type work, race horses, galloping horses, horses that compete in speed events, A higher starch diet can be beneficial for them because it helps to replace their muscle glycogen, or their stored form of glucose in their muscles, which is the fuel they're going to use for that type of exercise. But what we do in order to make sure that we don't have overload of that starch going to the hindgut is we always recommend that when people feed a higher starch diet, they stay less than 2 grams per kilogram of their horse's body weight in starch per meal. Now, some people say that you should feed no more than 1 gram per kilogram of body weight in starch per meal. But, you know, no need to take your calculators all out and try to figure all of this out at the moment. What we typically say is, you know, don't feed any more than 4 to 5 pounds of feed to your horse in one sitting, you know, and if you can go even smaller than that and a smaller meal, that's even better. Horses were never meant to eat large, high starch, grain-based meals over and over and over and over again. That was not how they were designed. But we don't use horses like they were designed to just be out in a prairie somewhere. We race them, we compete them, we stress them. So there needs to be a balance there. Some horses, like I said, do perform better on a higher starch diet, but you need to feed it in smaller amounts. And we've actually done a lot of things nowadays too to the feeds, you know, feeds for race horses and horses that do those types of speed events. They are higher in fat, they are lower in starch than they used to be, and that does reduce the risk to the hindgut.
Dr. Andrews, we have a question from Katarina in the live audience, and she would like to know if there is a connection between PSSM and hindgut issues.
I don't know of any exact relationship between the two, but certainly PSSM is a condition, depending on the type of PSSM the horse has, can lead to stress, and certainly that can lead to hindgut issues for sure. So anything that's going to stress the horse, especially if that horse is, has a condition that, that accumulates polysaccharides or sugar in those muscles, but doesn't seem to be much in the way of relationship to that, to the actual hindgut other than stress.
Thank you. Dr. Andrews, here's another one for you from Kathy in North Dakota, who says that she is a senior gelding with PPID that also struggles with fecal water syndrome. What are the current recommended treatment protocols for this?
Okay, so PPID is pituitary pars intermedia dysfunction, which is basically a hypersecretive type tumor, or could be hyperplastic cells in the pituitary gland that secretes high levels of ACTH, which can lead to lots of what you call PUPD. The horse pees a lot, drinks a lot, and develops a long hair coat. And then, maybe in some conditions would develop laminitis. So, you know, treatment is Pergolide or Presend, which is made by Boehringer Ingelheim. The fecal water syndrome is a condition whereby manure is watery at the beginning or the end of defecation, and the manure, the liquid runs down the legs and might lead to inflammation or scalding of the legs, so in the back legs. So there's a lot of different causes. And basically, if your horse has that condition and has PPID, certainly getting the horse on the proper treatment for that, for the PPID, may decrease the amount of fecal water that the horse has, because what's happening in PPID is the horse is drinking a lot of water. So it has the PUPD. And if you're going to drink more water, and we know that the large colon is very instrumental in regulating water secretion and water in the manure. So if you got more water in the manure than you need, then that may be associated with the horse drinking more water. But other causes include dietary changes. So if the horse is, you have a recent dietary change, you might want to consider making that a very a slow change, maybe over a week or two when you change diets. Now, one thing that people don't really think about is when you get a new batch of hay in. So what happens is, you know, you get the hay from the same person year after year after year. But the problem is that hay looks the same and it's from the same person, but it's likely different because it was maybe harvested at a different time. It's a second cut or third cut. And so that hay is different. So what we recommend, and I'm sure Dr. Gordon does too, is that when you're making this transition from one, from bales of hay, in the new bales of hay, is to save the old bales and slowly transition that horse to the new bales, rather than just starting to feed the new bales right away. So if you make that transition, that will help. And that some people think that the dietary changes, even with the new hay, can cause the more fecal water output. May not be really associated with the PPID. Also, the use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. We have a lot of older horses out there that are maybe lame, arthritic, and people use low dose and high dose non-steroidals to keep them comfortable. Toxic plants, you might have your veterinarian look around in your pastures, make sure that there's not plants that the horse is eating out there that might be causing a problem. You know, and Dr. Gordon may be able to shed a little bit more on the dietary things here. Certainly reducing the grain in the diet if the horse is on a high grain diet. Rich forages may lead to a lot of fecal water syndrome, and certainly doing the traveling on shows and things with new water. Sometimes horses will overdrink water when they get to a new place because it's different. So, you know, looking at the water intake in that horse too might be helpful.
Dr. Gordon, we have a question from Randy in our live audience that their horse is currently on GastroGuard for pyloric ulcers. Can and or should this horse get probiotics during the treatment?
That's a great question. I might bring Dr. Andrews into this one as well when it comes to GastroGuard. The thing is the GastroGuard pharmaceutical is raising the pH of the horse's stomach, and then it allows the lining of the stomach to heal itself, hopefully, with the pyloric ulcers. They can be really, really tricky to treat, for sure. There has not been enough research in my experience and what I know of the science, and I'm pretty deep into the science, that there is specifically a probiotic that would help with pyloric ulcers. I mean, pyloric ulcers can sometimes be helped with the pharmaceuticals, but there's a lot of horses that do not respond, because those people also contact us as nutritionists and want to know, how do I feed these horses? Some really good researchers in this area have said that the pyloric ulcers are not related to diet, but are more related to stress of those horses and breed, especially warm blood breeds. So it's a little bit of an enigma. However, all that being said, I still just treat these horses like they have ulcers, and I'm going to give them all the dietary things they're going to help with that. So I'm going to feed them a low starch diet, a very digestible forage. I want them chewing and digesting and swallowing their saliva that has bicarbonate in it as much as possible. I'm going to control their stress. I might put them on alfalfa hay. I'm going to give them a pH buffer supplement to help increase that pH as well. And then, you know, the probiotic supplement that we just launched, if the horse's gastrointestinal tract is stressed, is absolutely something that I would add in there as well. But there is no silver bullet for the pyloric ulcers. Dr. Andrews, do you have anything else to add?
No, I think, you know, when you're using GastroGuard, it does alter the gastrointestinal pH, but they have looked at the microbiome while horses are on Meprazole or a GastroGuard, and there doesn't seem to be any changes in the microbiome of the hindgut when the horse is on the GastroGuard. So, you know, I think the recommendations that Dr. Gordon made are perfect for horses that are on, you know, that have pyloric ulcers. And, you know, you may discuss it with your veterinarian to add some other treatments for the pyloric ulcers. GastroGuard is very safe, though, and but there's really nothing that you can do other than that, and then some other medications that might be helpful, and then dietary manipulations very helpful.
Awesome, thank you both. Dr. Gordon, Michael in Illinois wants to know if rolled oats constitute prebiotic fiber in a horse's diet.
All right, great question from Michael. I think this actually might be my favorite question of the evening because it's fun and it's different. And a lot of people would never think that oats are oats prebiotic fiber. But certainly oats are marketed to humans that way, that if you eat enough oats for breakfast in your oatmeal, this fiber is going to decrease your cholesterol and you're going to be heart healthier and that type of thing. And there actually was a flurry of research that was done on this in horses, gosh, probably 7+ years ago now, all sponsored by the Prairie Oat Growers Association based in Canada, in an effort to show how healthy oats can be for horses. They're sort of a, you know, my great grandfather fed oats, and then my grandfather fed oats, and my father fed oats, and my horses look great. So what are the benefits to oats, to horses in their diet? And one of the components of oats is a prebiotic fiber known as beta-glucan. And beta-glucans have been studied as a really good immune modulator. So the right type of beta-glucan in the right amount and under the right circumstances has a nice immune supporting effect. The challenge is because beta-glucans are only about 4.5% of the actual oat, and then the oats that you feed to the horse tend to be a very small percentage of the diet. I mean, maybe 10% or less of a horse's diet would be made up of oats, because you need to balance it with other things. You need to feed the horse their forage-based diet first. So while yes, oats do have some prebiotic fiber, you cannot rely on those oats to truly be that source of prebiotic fiber that you're hoping that they're going to be. If I want to think about other prebiotic fibers that are going to make a larger difference for horses, I'm going to think of things like soy hulls, beet pulp, even hay. So hay is in many ways a prebiotic fiber because the digestible form of the fiber in hay, the soluble fiber in hay, is really good food for the bugs. A prebiotic is basically food for the bugs in the microbiome of the horse. So yes, a little bit in rolled oats, but you can't rely on the oats to be that for your horse.
We have a question from Colleen in the live audience, Dr. Gordon. She wants to know if you can offer guidance on how to select an effective probiotic since there are so many that are available.
Yeah, so for us, what I do is when it comes to any supplement or even feeds, is I make them pass what we call the test ride. I mentioned this briefly earlier in the podcast where, you know, you want to buy a new car, you go out and you take your car for a test drive. If you go to buy a new horse, hopefully take your new horse for a test ride, unless you're really brave and you buy off of videos like some people do. But the ride part of test ride stands for research, ingredients, delivered amount, and efficacy. So any supplement or probiotic or gut health supplement you're going to choose for your horse, you want to look and make sure that there's actually research in horses. And you should be able to get some sort of access to the study, like some type of summary or a link to an abstract or a research paper, not just, oh, we say there's research. I can't tell you the amount of like products, and they say, oh, backed by research. And if you ask them for the research, there is none. It just doesn't even exist. They use it as a marketing term. And then you need to look at the ingredients and make sure they make sense. To me, way too many supplements on the market nowadays, that I call them sort of the kitchen sink supplements. They have 40 plus ingredients in them, seriously. And when you have so many ingredients in one supplement that you're going to give in a very small amount to your horse, none of them, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that there's just this mishmash of all these things together. So you want to look at the ingredients, make sure it makes sense. You want to look at the delivered amount. That's the other probably most common thing I see with supplements is they never have the right amount in them for a 1,200 pound animal. So people tag dress the supplements. They put only a tiny amount in there, but it'll be a gram of something or a half a gram of something or, you know, half a million of this or something that, but it's less than what you would give to a person or even a human baby. And then you think that's going to be the right amount for your horse. It just doesn't make sense. And then the E in test ride is for efficacy. And you should see a difference. If you're spending the money on a supplement to give to your horse and, you know, they do have some sort of hindgut problem or a gut health problem, and it's not doing what you expected it to do. It's not helping firm up their manure. It's not helping them seem less gassy. It's not helping their appetite. It's not helping them flourish and put on weight and that type of thing. Then that supplement's not working for you and doesn't pass the test ride. So that's what we always go back to. It works for sort of everything, which is why we like it, whether you're looking at joint supplements, gut health supplements, coat supplements, yeah, research, ingredients, delivered amount, and efficacy.
Awesome. Dr. Andrews, Andrea in England says that her horse is overweight, but she knows that horses need to eat frequently to reduce the risk of hindgut problems. What can she do to help her horse lose weight without jeopardizing his hindgut health?
Yeah, that's difficult because, you know, you want the horse to continuously eat. So what we've tried is obviously, I think what's really important is to have your hay tested. And the reason why I say that is because if you have an overweight horse, you don't want to be feeding a high sugar hay. Some of the hays, when they're put up, they can have a fairly high sugar. You're looking at something that's about 10% non-structural carbohydrates when you're feeding horses that have that are overweight and you want them to lose weight. These are the horses that might be insulin resistant as well. And that's something that you would have to have tested from your veterinarian. But and so the best thing to do is a lot of the, and I know Purina does, a lot of the feed companies will have representatives in your area that will actually come out and test your feed, test your grain, and test your hay to see what kind of sugar levels are in your hay. And then you can adjust that. And if you need to soak the hay in water for 30 minutes or so that you can decrease the non-structural carbohydrates in that hay, then that would be some way to just to feed more hay with a decrease in the sugar content. So the other thing that you could try would be providing hay nets with smaller openings. And this restricts the amount that the horse could eat. The horse is still working and generating saliva, but it's just not getting as much hay. Then the other thing is to really minimize the grain that the horse is getting, and then provide a ration balancer. And the ration balancer is minerals and vitamins and things like that that really balance the kind of add to the hay and give that horse all the nutrition, but it's in a smaller amount and doesn't have a lot of sugar and grain in it. So those types of things can help, especially with that overweight horse. And then all of these things will help the hindgut as well, and allow the horse to lose some weight, because when the horse loses weight, the horse feels better, just like people. So you want to make sure. And then I would really suggest that if you have an overweight horse, then, having that horse tested for insulin resistance would be helpful as well, because having an insulin resistant horse can lead to foot problems like laminitis.
Dr. Gordon, Catherine in Denmark wants to know how you manage and treat horses with hindgut problems on a long-term basis.
Great question from Catherine, all the way from Denmark. As just a little personal note, I own two Danish mares that are out in my field right now in Florida, and I purchased them directly from Denmark. I've been there, and I adore both of my Danish mares. So, managing and treating horses with chronic hindgut problems on a long-term basis. If I were to say a one-word answer, it would be consistency. So consistency, consistency, consistency. Because to me, these horses that have chronic hindgut problems, it's when things change that really it flares things up. One of my Danish mares, she's a sensitive mare, and I have to be very, very careful about changing over any type of hay and the quality of the hay. And even if it's just still all grass hay, if I change from one type to another type to another type, I mean, it really irritates her gut. So a portion of this mare's diet, I always keep in very consistent soaked short fiber hay cubes, and that helps to keep things consistent for her. I also keep her on she's an easy keeper. I keep her on a really good quality ration balancer, and the quality protein tends to help these horses. And then I put her on a gastric buffer to help with the foregut, and then I put her on our new probiotic that helps with the hindgut. But truly, the biggest thing for her is managing her triggers, which tends to be any rapid changes of anything. She just doesn't do well. So some of these horses, I mean, I see a lot of them because we always get the calls about the horses that are tricky. Some of these horses we can fix, and you find that thing and you can move on and they do great and their gut is really resilient. Others, you do have to treat them like the special flower that they are on a long-term basis. And again, consistency is good for them.
Dr. Gordon, we have a question from Lucia in our live audience. Do you recommend the use of silage in a horse's diet?
I do not recommend the use of silage in the horse's diet. I know people that have done it, and they tell me that it has worked fantastic. But personally, because I don't feel like I can control enough of the factors in terms of, okay, so silage is, fermented or chopped forage. Sometimes it's mixed in with grain components too, like corn or type of sweet feed, and they basically wrap it in plastic and they let it ferment, and it's sort of like a wine making process, but in the feed and forage industry, and it's fed a lot to ruminants. But in my experience, I feel like it's not a controlled enough process for me to trust it as a source of forage in horses. Maybe that's a bias of mine. Maybe it's because I myself and my team get so many calls from people with horses with trouble, and they want us to help them. So I stay away from silage. But that's a no for me.
Yeah, I think one of the things, haylage and silage in Northern Europe is probably okay because of the climate. But here in the States, especially in the South, we had one of our managers at the farm, they put up some haylage and started feeding the horses without asking me. And we lost five of them due to botulism. So I would really try to discourage the use of that unless you really know what you're doing, because those bacteria can overgrow in there. And cattle, it's not a problem because the feed goes right in the rumen. And the rumen has a lot of bacteria that detoxify those bacteria, and they can really utilize that haylage. But horses and silage, but the horses are just not equipped to do much with the haylage, especially in the States. So,
wow, that's really good information. Thank you. Dr. Andrews, Janie in Illinois wants to know if there have been any recent advances in diagnosing hindgut ulcers.
So what you're talking about, Janie, is right dorsal colitis or colonic ulcers. So the best thing really to evaluate a horse that may have right dorsal colitis or colonic ulcers is to an ultrasound examination by your veterinarian. They can actually look at the right dorsal colon, which seems to be sort of a trigger portion of the GI tract that's really susceptible to ulcerations. And so your veterinarian can examine that area with the ultrasound really and can pick up edema in that right dorsal colon wall. And so your veterinarian can use the ultrasound, and it's just on the right side of the horse. So it's pretty easy to see, very superficial, just under the skin, and you know, can document that thickening of the right dorsal colon. Also, the vet can evaluate the manure for occult blood. So sometimes when these horses develop the right dorsal colitis, they get bleeding in their manure. And so you can, even using the occult blood test for people, you can pick up that occult blood, especially if the horse has diarrhea. And then looking at fecal pH might be helpful as well, because some of these horses will have a very low pH. Normally, the pH in the manure should be around 7, should be neutral. So when we talk about acid, it's below 7. If you talk about alkaline, it's above 7. So about 7, between 7, sometimes 6.5 and 7.5. But a pH that drops below 6.5 might indicate that the horse has issues with right dorsal colitis. But the ultrasound is the best. Also, looking at blood work. So these horses, they will leak blood, and sometimes they'll be anemic. Sometimes they'll be hypoproteinemic. And so looking at a blood profile, having your veterinarian check the blood and see if those changes are occurring, that may be helpful in making a diagnosis.
Dr. Andrews, we have a question from Heather in the live audience. She would like to know, when should you feed a grain meal in relation to travel?
Oh, a grain meal in relation to travel? That might be a better question for Dr. Gordon, but I would say probably, you know, don't need to be feeding a lot of grain when the horse, before the horse travels. I would say, you know, give the horse some hay. The biggest problem that I see with people that trailer their horse are the weekend warriors, is that these people that go on weekend competitions, their horse is out in the pasture all week, and then either Thursday or Friday, they bring it into the stall, start feeding it dry hay, and then they load it in the trailer, and then they go off to the competition. The horse is getting going from 90% water in the grass that's out in the pasture to 90% dry matter in that hay. And so they don't let the horse acclimate. And if the horse is not drinking very well, then that horse could, you know, get an impaction colic, something like that. So, but I don't think they're really that you need to feed grain to horses. Now, when you get to the competition, then I think, you know, you can, depending on what, if the horse is a barrel racer or pole bender, or you're, you know, doing jumping, dressage, things like that, you know, using grain. And I think Dr. Gordon mentioned 4 to 5 pounds at any one feeding is probably what is in my mind is what should be done. But I don't think you need to give horses grain before traveling. So anyway, Dr. Gordon could weigh in on that.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of times if I have a horse, I'm taking it somewhere and it's got to go to, you know, a show or something like that. It sort of depends also on the circumstance too. So if the horse is used to getting breakfast at 6 a.m. and the trailer's leaving at 9 a.m., sure, I'll give them their usual breakfast at 6 a.m. If you're pulling out at 5 in the morning, you know, don't get up at 2 a.m. and give the horse their breakfast. But what I'll tend to do is make sure they have some hay in their stall overnight, so there's something in their belly. I might give them a little snack of something like our Outlast product, which is a nice gastric buffer. And so that buffers the gastric environment for a couple hours and put them, you know, give that to them about 20 minutes before they get on the trailer. But no need to have like, oh, they gotta have that good breakfast in their belly before they get on the trailer. No need for that.
Awesome. Dr. Gordon, Joe in Australia wants to know what horse owners can do to prevent hindgut problems in their horses. So we've talked a bit about, I think, treating them, but I think she's looking for a little more prevention.
Yeah. So in terms of prevention, if you don't ever want a horse with hindgut problems, what do you do? One, let them be a horse as much as possible. You know, horses were meant to be outside, moving around, heads down, grazing in a herd. You know, that doesn't always work if you have a show horse or you have a horse, you have a lot of lush pasture and your horse tends to be metabolic or an easy keeper, you know, then that becomes detrimental for them actually to be out with their head down grazing all the time. But find the right mix for your horse, right? So if you have a horse that, you know, tends to be sensitive in their gut, you've got to find that, you know, right amount of pasture time, the hay that agrees with them, the fiber length that basically agrees with them, the feed that agrees with them, and enough of a lifestyle that agrees with them that you're not stressing them out all the time and then contributing to hindgut issues. You know, there's no magic bullet that will protect a horse from any type of hindgut challenge, but it certainly seems that some horses are more resilient. I mean, I mentioned my two Danish mares before, and knock on wood, one of them, I feel like I could just change her hay every day, change her feed every day, put her on a trailer every day, and knock on wood, that mare's fecal consistency is fantastic, and she's just super, super resilient, and she's got like the stomach of steel. And the other one, you know, forget it. It's like you look at her wrong. The sun comes up a little different. There's a cloud in the sky. Oh, my God. You know, things are off balance. But yeah, treat them like a horse and then find the things that work with their body is what I would say.
Awesome. Dr. Andrews, Jackie in British Columbia, says that her horse only experiences fecal water syndrome during the winter months. What might cause this, and is there anything she can do to manage it?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's difficult in British Columbia, which I'll be up there in November. But in British Columbia, it gets a little cold, I think, during the winter. And so you're obviously changing feed. They're probably going from some grazing to feeding them dry hay, maybe some round bales, whatever is being fed. So it probably might be due to change in forage in those horses, and you're feeding more concentrates because the horses are colder. And that may be looking at the right diet, maybe changing things around a little bit, you know, for your forage. If you're having some issues, then just changing the forage a little bit, maybe the transition also from the for new forage to the old forage, or from the the new forage to the old forage, or the old forage to the new forage, you might try to do that a little bit slower in these horses. So and then feed less grain, and again try to keep it to the 4 to 5 pounds. But and then there probably is not a lot of pasture in the winter, and so that's something that is also you're transitioning from that you know, the pasture to the hay. So you just kind of have to manipulate things, you know, find the right diet to help. And I think when you're looking at fecal water, an abundance of fecal water, maybe looking at some probiotics might be helpful you know, to help with that water absorption, a little bit better water absorption in the large colon.
Dr. Andrews, Kim in our live audience wants to know if there are any other options besides sucralfate to help hindgut ulcers.
I think we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but using psyllium, we use a lot of psyllium, reducing the bulk in the diet. Just having graze a little bit on grass, but we usually switch the horses over to a complete feed pelleted diet that decreases the amount of actual bulk in the diet. People don't like that very much. I know horse owners don't, oh man, you're going to put my horse on a complete pelleted diet. Oh, I don't like that. But it's for a short period of time when the horse has the ulcers, and then we can monitor the protein in the blood. We can monitor the ultrasound evaluation and get the horse so that the bulk in the diet. But sucralfate, psyllium are two excellent things. And I know you're probably looking at money, you know, because sucralfate is costly, especially when you have to use 10 grams daily, sometimes 3 to 4 times a day. So it can be difficult. But using psyllium can be very helpful. It's usually pretty cheap. And you kind of think, well, the horse might have intermittent diarrhea, but it's amazing. The psyllium really helps that gut maintain its water balance. So, you know, it can be very helpful. So, we you know, try to, if the horse is on nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, you know, try to get the horse off, wean it off of the bupivacaine, and, you know, the ferrococcib. I know there's a question later on about ferrococcib, but any of the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories can inflame the bowel. And so that's something that you'll want to look at too. Try to get down to the lowest dose possible of the nonsteroidals in these horses to maintain their decrease in lameness, but also maintain the gut. So, but you could try psyllium and see if that doesn't help.
Awesome. Dr. Gordon, this will probably be our last question since we're almost at the end of our time tonight. And this one's from Rose in New York, who wants to know how steamed hay might affect the hindgut.
That's a great question. Thank you, Rose, for that. You know, you can get hay steamers nowadays, and they'll steam your hay for your horse. It does certainly help horses with allergies because it helps really cut down on dust and mold that might be in that hay. So horses that are sensitive to that, it can be very helpful. The steaming process basically starts to cook the hay. So if you have a horse that has hindgut issues and the hay that they have, and say you only have one type of hay and it's a little bit of a more stalky or long stem hay that's and you know, you don't have access to a more digestible hay, steaming the hay can be helpful for those horses. You're basically starting to cook it a little bit. It makes it a little softer. It can increase the palatability. Most horses do like the taste of steamed hay. There's been a tiny bit of research that shows that the steaming of the hay can affect the protein content and the digestibility of that protein. But I think more work actually needs to be done in that area because I don't see protein deficient horses when they're on steamed hay. If anything, the steamed hay, I think sometimes these horses are getting even more out of the hay because it does sort of cook it a little bit, makes it a little bit more, the fiber more digestible for them. So it can be beneficial. So it definitely worth a shot for these horses that have sensitive guts and you're trying to find that right forage source that you can give them that is that right forage for that horse. Steaming it is worth a try.
Awesome. Well, that is all the time we have for tonight, but thank you both for joining us.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you very much, Haley, for inviting me to this, and certainly Dr. Gordon. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Great questions.
And thank you to Purina Animal Nutrition for sponsoring this event. Finally, thank you to our audience for listening and sending in these questions. If you're listening to us after the live event as a podcast episode, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend Ask the Horse Live to a friend. Until next time, from everyone at the horse, have a great night.